Hey y'all, this is Rich Collins of Renaissance Publishing. Welcome to Mardi Gras Beyond the Beads, a series of conversations with Mardi Gras historian Errol Laborde about the history and traditions of Carnival, the greatest free show on earth. Hey, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Today it's Errol and I, but we brought in a special guest. We've got Bo Dallas of the Wild Magnolias, who are here to talk to us about Mardi Gras Indians. And so I'm going to jump right in. Bo, your family's been a part of Mardi Gras Indian tradition for generations. Can you explain what that tradition and culture is all about for listeners who might be unfamiliar?
Well, for my culture, we're Mardi Gras Indians, and we sew all year long just for one day. When I say sewing, I mean bead by bead, stone by stone, putting feathers together. And this culture has been going on for a long time, and it's still going strong. And I picked it up from my dad, being nosy. I could be real honest. I was being nosy, and I picked it up. Because back then, my mom really didn't want me to mess because it was kind of violent back then. They still was fighting each other and stabbing each other. And I wasn't worried about that, you know, because my dad never really had no problems with the Indians. You know, he was always the person they came to. So I cut my mom's purse that she got from overseas, and it had a bunch of beads on it. And she never wore this purse, y'all. Don't think it was like something that she wore every day. She never wore this purse ever.
Right.
But the day I cut it, that's the day she go look for it. And I started sewing, and I was only supposed to mask for 1 year, and it's going on 36 years now.
So when you're talking about these suits, a lot of people have probably seen a picture, but I don't know if everybody understands the amount of work, time, expense, and effort that goes into them. Can you explain just what kind of a...
The timing, like right now, my timing is so off. And I could be real honest because I'm so used to being up late sewing and getting together for February. So right about now, we'll be putting together headpieces. I have a place in my house, my Indians call the dungeon, because once they come in, they can't leave out. And we get together and we're sewing. So right now I have all this free time and I don't know what to do with it because we're not masking for Mardi Gras. And the time is you it's a sacrifice because you're losing sleep. You can't go out like you want to go out. And I just had this talk the other day, like I've never been to a parade around Mardi Gras time ever. Just because I'm trying to get ready for Mardi Gras, I'm trying to get prepped, and it's a big sacrifice. You know, you might want to go out with your spouse. You can't do that. You might want to spend money on this, but you can't do that because you got to go buy some feathers. So it's a big sacrifice.
Where do you get all of the materials? Is it various places?
It's various. Well, we can find it the cheapest, to be honest with you. Because every year, like, the prices are going up higher and higher. So, like, now beads, if I like a certain kind of bead, it might be at Walmart, be at Michael's. I just pick it up and get it. Velvet, well, we can find velvet the cheapest. Cause like down here, velvet is like almost $25 a yard. Hmm. And I may use up to 13 yards of velvet. Feathers are like $3.50 a pound. I might use up to 7 pounds.
Oh my.
And that's for a small suit, you know. So right now, like a lot of my Indians, we try to do a GoFund. That kind of helped us out a little bit.
Oh, right.
So it's a lot of different things that we could do. But material-wise, we just go wherever we can find them, to be honest with you.
That's funny to picture you guys like lined up in the checkout line at Michael's.
Can you picture that? I mean, and with my game, we take field trips. That's what we call them. Right. And you can picture all of us in Michael's with our little phones, our little discount cards and all that. Picking up needles. And it'd be so funny because the people be looking at us like, where's y'all going with all these canvas boards? And where y'all going with needles and beads? And we just be putting our heads down like, y'all just don't understand. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's the one place that, like, the one errand that I try and avoid at all costs, you know, when my wife goes to Michael's, you know, but you have a legitimate reason to go, you know?
I hate to go to Michael's, don't get me wrong, but I know I have to go. That's like going to Walmart. You just hate to go there, but you know you have to go to Walmart.
That's amazing. it's a very laborious project. It takes a lot of time, a lot of money and effort. But now, can you explain what the actual, so that's all to have a suit so you can parade on Mardi Gras Day and then Super Sunday. Can you tell people, somebody might be listening to this in Europe or something, explain to them what the actual parading experience is like?
Well, Mardi Gras Day is a whole nother experience. When I put that suit on Mardi Gras morning, it's one of good, like, it's a feeling that you just can't even describe because you didn't work all year to make this suit. And you didn't made that bell, that's what we call it, because as a wild magnolia, we hit the streets about 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning. And you didn't work, you didn't sacrifice just to hit for that one day. And once you put that suit on, it's a whole nother feeling. Even for St. Joseph night, and St. Joseph night is a time that Indians get out and at nighttime. So from like 6 until 1-2 o'clock in the morning, Indians are on the street. Super Sunday is a good time because you'll get to catch all the Indians in one spot. Every Indian in the city be in one spot during Super Sunday. So Mardi Gras is just that feeling of joy because when you hit the streets, you don't care how you look, but you're the prettiest thing on the street. Right. In your head, you know, right. And you could be,
and reality too, I think.
Right. And one thing I was raised up on, if don't matter how an Indian looks, you know, they could have one feather in their head to 3,000 feathers, they're still pretty.
Okay, can you explain a little context though? What is the significance of these suits? You know, how did it start? Why do you guys build these elaborate suits and then go out and parade?
Well, it started from slavery time when the Indians ran to, when the slaves ran to the Indians, I'm sorry, and they was running from their masters. So the masters couldn't go on the Indians' territory. So to fast forward a little bit, Africans couldn't go on Canal Street. We couldn't go on St. Charles. We couldn't go on Bourbon Street. So we started our own Mardi Gras, which started with the Mardi Gras Indians, the Baby Dolls, Zulu, Skeleton Men, and stuff like that. All that was neighborhood parades. And I say neighborhood because they was parading for the people that couldn't get off their porch, which was the older people. And they was bringing them to the neighborhood so they could have fun too. But Mardi Gras Indians started getting bigger and bigger suit-wise. And we just started adding more and more stuff. Till back then, they was using fish scales, their wives' old dresses, wow. The brooches, like the wives used to wear, go to church and stuff like that. But now, I wish we could wear that, but we can't wear that now. You know, now it just can't be more bigger and elaborate and more prettier.
Right. And this goes back to, is it the 1800s or is it even earlier?
I think it's like the late 1800s. That's the first time they say Indians hit the street. And it was the Creole Wild West that hit the streets then.
That was the first one?
Right. Right. Gotcha.
Okay, that leads me to a question, which is, I know there's uptown tribes and downtown tribes. I don't exactly know the difference, but can you tell me, just tell us how many people are involved in this each year? Like, is it?
Every year it gets bigger and bigger. I mean, I'm so glad to say that because at one time it was looking like it was kind of fading out a little bit, but it's getting to the point everybody want to be an Indian. Now don't get me wrong, everybody wants to be it, but everybody don't have the patience and the time to do it.
Mm, right.
So, right now, you can't even count how many Indians would be on the street because every year it's getting bigger and bigger. Some may mad, some may not mad. So, but every year it's getting bigger and bigger.
Are there like 30 and or 40 tribes maybe?
I think it's really more than that. I'm looking like probably about 100 something tribes.
Okay, so it's bigger.
Yeah, it's way bigger.
And then is there an important distinction between uptown and downtown? How's that work?
It's so many categories, I'm gonna say.
Okay.
Because the West Bank have a certain style they do.
Okay.
Okay. Downtown, Seven Ward, Tremé area, they have three dimension, which we call creative arts. Okay. Now they have some downtown India where flat patches, what we call picture patches.
Okay.
And that's what uptown wear. We wear all flat patches, which tells a story. But back in the day, once downtown started getting flat patches, they outlined their patches, their men and flowers or birds, they outlined it in black.
Okay.
And the uptown Indians outlined theirs in white.
Okay, so there's actually appreciable stylistic differences that you can
right,
see.
Right, right. It really is.
You said each you tell a story. Does your suit each year tell a different story?
Yeah, every year mine tell a story. Last year mine told, I call it Indian Paradise, which was the Indians and the pilgrims kind of meeting each other. And it was trading liquor and seasonings and stuff like that, and gold and stuff like that. This year, it was the older Indians teaching the younger Indians the culture and talking to them about the fight and stuff like that. I never made an Indian suit that was fighting because I think we got too much of violence going on right now anyway. So I never make an Indian suit that's like Indians killing Indians or blacks killing Indians. I never made that kind of suit, but that's just my preference.
Understood. So can you explain the different roles in the parades? I know there's like, you hear it in the songs, but there's Spy Boy and Wild Man and Big Chief.
Right.
I mean, I've been
here. You have a Spy Boy, which is go by his name. He's spying for other Indians.
Okay.
You have a Flag Boy. The Flag Boy is carrying the gang's name.
Okay.
Because he has like a flag and it says Wild Magnolias or whatever the gang that they're with. You have a Wild Man. The Wild Man is keeping everybody off the chief. You know, you have people that want to jump in front of the chief and take pictures or want to touch him and stuff like that. So his job is security, basically. Then you have the Big Queen. She stands next to the chief, and then you have the Big Chief.
And then, but then there's other, everyone else is just, they don't have an official title, is that what it is?
Well, they have, because you can have more than one Spy Boy, you can have more than one Flag Boy. Then you have a Gang Flag, where he's kind of over the Flag Boys. You have Second Chiefs. So everybody has a different role.
So Bo, and the point of it is that the tradition of it is that you've got all these different tribes out marching and parading on Mardi Gras Day. The chief decides the route and the chief decides how you're going to interact with the other people that are the other ones that are out there marching.
Well, no, it's all of playing a game. You know, it's like a war game to us. Whoever's going to do the biggest and the prettiest, you know, because Spy Boys going to meet the Spy Boys. They're going to dance and show their suits off all the way back to get to the chief. And when two chiefs meet, everybody wants to see that because they want to see, especially if it's from an uptown to downtown tribe. They want to see that who's the best uptown and who's the best downtown. And it's just a big old fun thing, you know. And I've got people that's in other gangs that's in my family, you know, like we're kin to each other. And people be like, boy, we think y'all be about to fight. But the whole time it's just a acting thing, you know, because after we get finished that night, hey, what ballroom you at? All right, I'm on my way. I'm about to come meet you there. We have drinks together and stuff like that. But it's all about fun.
That sounds great. Your father is important for many reasons. But as I was researching to talk to you today, there's two things that I wanted to ask you about. One is, it seemed like he was important in helping make that transition from when it was a little wilder or maybe a little more rough to more about the prettiest suit. Can you talk to about his contributions there?
Well, like I said before, when I first started, and even before when I started, they were more into the real type of Indians I could see, like using hatchets, using machetes and stuff like that. So when these things started to get a little bit more expensive, my dad and a few other guys got together and was like, hey, this stuff getting kind of expensive, y'all, that we fighting in. We need to try to kind of make a difference with this. So we're going to start battling with suits instead of battling with our fists. And it's kind of a thing they need to go by with today. You know, stop trying to battle with guns and stuff and talk things out or just leave it alone sometime.
Right.
So, and with him, he kind of made that transition, even with the music wise. You know, it was, our music was bass drum tambourine, a Heineken bottle,
right,
on the wall, or a bucket. So he turned it out, okay, we're gonna bring bass drums to Indians. He was the first person brought a bass drum to the street. After that, okay, we got a whole bands came behind him. So that started bringing more and more people to New Orleans to see Indians because they started hearing the music. And that started giving Indians more of our popularity.
Well, that's the other thing I wanted to ask you is that it seems like he was the first one to record the songs with some really very successful recordings.
Mm-hmm.
And then to tour, to play all over the place. I mean, they played it
right.
Carnegie Hall and stuff.
Yeah, he played at Carnegie Hall. He didn't play it for two presidents. And the way he started, Quint Davis over Jazz Fest was going to another guy's Indian practice.
Right.
And which was friends with my dad. And my dad came in and started singing. And he was like, wait a minute, who is that? Wait, hold up, talking about, I know I probably listened to this guy, but this guy just started singing. And he went to my dad, was like, look, I want to record you. My dad was like, yeah, right, whatever. What is you talking about? And at the time, Quint was going to Tulane. Quint was in college.
Right.
And Jazz Fest was at Tulane. My dad came there, and it was history after that.
So how important was Jazz Fest to the sort of increased awareness and appreciation of Indians everywhere?
I think to this day, it's still appreciated because a lot of people don't make it for Mardi Gras, I must say. But Jazz Fest, they get to see all the Indians. They get to see all the performances. And with Indians and second liners, they see that all day. Because, you know, Jazz Fest, every other hour, an Indian tribe is, well, I ain't gonna see one, but like five of them walk around the Jazz Fest. And they get to take pictures with them and be up close to them rather than Mardi Gras Day. You can't really get close to them on Mardi Gras Day.
Right. Let's say it's middle of the summer, early fall, when it's not Jazz Fest time, it's not Mardi Gras time, it's not Super Sunday. Do you get together with your the rest of the group, and do you?
My group. Let me tell you about my group. My group is big babies. My group, we get together all year long. I don't care what it is. Tomorrow is the anniversary of my dad's passing, so we have something we can do tomorrow together. And when I say we get together for whatever, they get together, they want barbecue, they want a party. Certain nights, the men go out together. Certain nights, we all go out together. And it's just one big happy family, you know. And that's just the way I like it, that we all stick together, because you never know what might happen.
And I assume it's people of many different ages, right? I mean, these are guys that have been a long time.
My youngest, which is my daughter, she's three, and the oldest, I think, is me. I think I am the oldest.
But you're the oldest?
Besides my mom. I take that back. My mom's the oldest. I just had to look over there. I just thought about it. She's the oldest. Talk about not me.
So I would have thought there had been a bunch of guys, older guys, that, you know, from your dad's generation.
He's older than me, too. I think he's like 45. But it varies, you know, like I said, from a newborn on to whatever. It don't really matter.
And how many Wild Magnolias are there?
This year we have 16.
Okay. So it's never huge groups. It's not like there's 100 people and anything like that.
No, but a long time ago, they did have a gang called 101.
Okay.
And the reason why, because they had 101 Indians.
Okay, well, so that...
I'm so glad they're not around right now, because I could not see myself meeting 101 Indians. That would not go wrong. I would have to turn off sooner or later. I'm not about to meet all y'all.
Right. That's like the, they're like a super crew of
Mardi Gras. Right.
Endymion.
By the time I get to number 20, I'm done.
All right. Well, so, I have a couple more questions for you. You'd mentioned, and I saw in another story, you'd said that when you were a kid, your dad was all for you masking. Your mom was maybe reluctant. I know you said that you're at least one of your children now is part of the Wild Magnolias. Was there any debate about that in your family, or was everybody all for it?
My mom, again, she didn't want my, because I have two girls that's in it. She didn't really want them out as a newborn.
Okay.
You know, because once again, you know, stuff can happen. People start running and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, me, I'm like, man, they gonna be all right. They in strollers, you know, whatever, whatever. Because I'm to the point, like, the younger they out there, the better it is. Because
right.
My girls, they start sewing. If I start sewing, they want to start sewing. And my oldest girl, she started sewing before I even told her. Like, right. She had a needle in her mouth, trying to thread the needle, picking up beads. Like, I had to sew when they go to sleep because they all want to get on top of the table. They want to sew with me. They want to help me pull the needle down. And I love it, but it aggravates when I'm trying to get in the groove and start sewing.
Right.
But to me, the younger they out there, the better it is because they get to appreciate it more.
Yeah, well, it sounds like the sewing is as dangerous as the actual parading.
Dealing with Indians, with little children, yeah, it's dangerous.
And
my daughters, they'll pick up a needle. My daughters will pick up a needle, and don't get me wrong, they don't stick themselves, but they really be wanting to sit down and sew all the time.
Right. And you mentioned that they've been out in a stroller. Have you ever decorated or made a you know, a suit for a stroller for one of your kids?
No, I never did that one. I always did the wagon, like a little horse wagon, whatever I call it.
There you go.
And I'll make it into that. But I never really did the stroller thing. Everybody does a stroller. Everybody does the stroller thing. So I always try to do something a little different.
There you go.
Than what everybody else is doing.
There you go. So so I got two more questions for you. Then we'll see if Errol has anything. But so you hinted at it a little bit. I was wondering what you were going to do because of the pandemic. Have you basically just everyone taking the year off? You're saving the money for the suit and you'll do it?
Yeah, because I really had to sit down and think about it just because I have a mom, I have two girls, I have a family, you know, that it could really hit. So I had to sit down and think about it. So I made everybody, because I had a wild man, we was really waiting on them to pull a plug on him. That's how bad it was. I mean, because like his kidneys shut down, his liver had shut down. All because of the corona. He had it. And he's a type, if I'm going out there, he's coming out there behind me.
Right.
You know, and that's just the way he is. So I kind of had to think about it on the safety of everybody else. Because I know if I were to say, okay, yeah, we masking, the Wild Magnolias is going out on the street on Second and Drive, everybody on Second Drive was going to be packed. It was going to be packed out there, and that's more of a risk. Everybody on my conscience, as
right.
me being a chief, I have to think about certain things to make everybody else safe.
Right, of course. And is your friend okay?
Yeah, he's back 100, which is kind of crazy. And I can tell you a story about that. His son, I can see, saved his life. Because what I mean by that, His son is not the praying child, don't get me wrong, he's not, but his mom went to his house and he has his Indian soup on a stand. And the son went to the Indian soup and started praying. The next day he woke up out of the coma.
Oh, wow.
And it was like so crazy. And when I got the phone call, his mom was crying. It was like, he woke up and stuff like that. I was like, oh, wow, okay, well, he's woke. But they say he still can't talk because he got the tubes down his throat and stuff like that. And he then shook back to be 100.
I'm so glad to hear that. That's scary. So
yeah, that really was. That really made me like have to sit back and think about it.
Well, that I have two more questions for you. Actually, one, you're reminding me as I'm watching you. Where do you meet? Where's the Magnolias meeting spot?
On Second and Drives. We are, it's about Mardi Gras Day.
No, for where's your headquarters if you're going to get together and see the guys?
It varies. Sometimes we might go on a lakefront outside. Everybody bring their tables and we'll sit out there. And so we're looking at a game. Most of the time they come by me.
Okay.
We come by my mom's house. So it varies where we go to sit down and conjugate with each other.
I got you. Because I had read in the story of a couple years ago that do you live above a shop? Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's why I'm at night. I'm in the shop.
So, and tell me about that a little bit. It sounds interesting.
It's a barbershop. Well, beauty shop, I'm gonna say, because it got women and men that does hair here. So, and there's a house on top of it. But my mom stays up there now, and I stay in the east.
Oh, okay. So you don't, I got you. So you don't stay in the shop?
No, not no more, no, but I used to.
Gotcha. But that can be one of the places that people gather, obviously.
Right. That's where the dungeon's at. The place we call the dungeon.
That is the dungeon. Okay. That's what I want to know. All right, okay, so Bo Dallas, thank you so much. I have one more question for you. I asked this to everybody I've been talking to recently, which is, it's been a crazy year, you know, the pandemic. What, as you think about, the, you know, your tradition and everything you love about New Orleans, what worries you right now and what makes you feel hopeful?
What worries me, the second string that everybody keeps talking about that's coming back around, you know, and it's hurtful because a lot of people that's getting it is the older people.
Right.
And now they're saying kids are getting it. So that's the kind of thing that's really worrying me more so, because I have two little girls, you know, and my oldest girl, she caught a little bit of it, but we caught it before time that it got bad. Only thing she had was the headache part.
Right.
She had like a real bad headache. So, and then we pulled out of school again. That's the only thing that really kind of scares me is that part. And the part that got me hopeful, because everybody's really doing what they need to be doing. You know, I every time I go somewhere, I see people with their mask on. I see people using hand sanitizer. I'm glad to see a mask because I need to put mine in my pocket. and different things like that. So I have a lot of reasons why, you know, it could be hopeful. And then that's the only thing I'm just waiting on.
And then what's your vision for, Mardi Gras 2022? What do you picture happening?
Oh, I think it's gonna be bigger and better than ever.
Well, we certainly hope so. Hey, thank you for talking to me. It's fascinating to hear your experiences. Errol, Kelly, do you guys have any more that we want to talk to Bo about?
Well, to borrow from the Indians, I think you pretty much covered the battlefield here. but I do just want to have maybe one follow-up question I'd like to ask. You're talking about you made reference to St. Joseph's Night. Yeah, I've always been fascinated about that part, about the Indian history, that more so than now, but the way I understand it, it used to be, well, the Indians were never very public outside their neighborhood, but it used to be there were 2 days a year you'd see them on Mardi Gras and on St. Joseph's Day.
Right.
That's when they come out. In my understanding, and tell me if I'm wrong, okay, that the reason because of this blending culture and the St. Joseph, which is Sicilian, was because there were so many, well, a lot of Sicilians lived in the same neighborhood. There were small Sicilian groceries in the same neighborhood. And so there's a lot of exchange of activities and ideas between those cultures. Is that correct?
Right, right.
Okay. And they'd see like St. Joseph's altars in the churches. And so I thought that was that. I was wondering when Richard mentioned the Jazz Fest, it seems to me now the Indians are so much more public than they ever were. And I think the Jazz Fest is a huge reason. And as you mentioned, people can get closer to it.
Well, Indians is way more public than what it was back then. As far as being out. And what I noticed, you know, even like my group, we still have secret stuff that we have going on. You know, don't get me wrong. We public as far as coming out suit wise. People still want Indians for weddings and funerals and stuff like that. So yeah, we're gonna do that. But we still have our own language. We have our own little secrets. You know, and that's the beauty of it, because when you see two Indians meet, you kind of wonder what they're talking about. But we know what we're saying to each other. You know, and even like going to Jazz Fest and stuff like that. These suits are like thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, you know? So that's just a little bit that we can put back in our pocket for the following year.
Right.
You know, or go and do a wedding or go and do performances, you know, cause all Indian can't perform like we do. You know, you have a handful of them that do performances on a stage or stuff like that. But yeah, we're more public and I kind of agree with it. Because these suits are way more expensive than it was back in the day. We can't throw away suits the day after Mardi Gras like they used to do back then.
Right. Bill, I have one more question for you. How how many gigs did you, like jobs, you know, performances did you lose because of COVID this year? And are you hoping to get back to that later in 21 or in 22?
We didn't have no gigs for COVID. I mean, Jazz Fest, French Quarter Fest, every kind of festival you could think of, we missed out on it. Right. You know, in clubs, Tipitina's, House of Blues, Howlin' Wolf, all these places got closed down. So we, you know, I tried to do the live thing. I'm kind of hard with the live because, you know, I'm so used to performing in front of people.
Oh, you mean like a Facebook Live thing and all that?
That is hard
for me. That's worse.
That is so hard because I'm so used to telling people to scream and y'all dance and stuff like this. And, oh, no, that I just couldn't do it.
Understood. Well, I hope you get a bunch of jobs coming up soon. Maybe the end of 20. Well, obviously, if they're scheduling Jazz Fest and French Quarter Fest for October, maybe that's right. A good sign, you know?
Well, it's starting to kick back up now. I guess for Mardi Gras time, people want to do performances and stuff like that. So hopefully, got my fingers crossed.
Well, me too. Hope you guys get back to it. Bo Dallas, thank you for your time.
Oh, man, thank y'all.